Mini episode 1712 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1712. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, our FDH Hoops Analyst, my great pal Ben Chu. And he is often here to talk hoops, although in the not-too-distant future, not too distant at all, he'll be on here to talk streaming with me, as he's been as well, the streaming business. A lot of stuff going on there, but today it's hoops. And since we are presently, as we are recording this, at the NBA All-Star break, we're going to take a look here. We got the stretch run coming up. We're going to be taking a little bit of a look back and a little bit of a look forward here and try to anticipate the playoffs while we are at it. We are using as our guide, among other things here, you can find it on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, the 2024 FDH NBA stretch run breakdown. Right there, linked at the top of the page, go check that out. It is a nice statistical index here. It is a compendium of a lot of different leading statistical categories. Thanks to Basketball Reference for furnishing many of the stats. It has the FDH power rankings in there as well. We'll use this as our guide in a number of different areas to take a look at things. But Ben Chu, always a pleasure, my man. So great to have you back on, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate it as always, Rick. Let's dive in.
All right, let's do this. It's a thing where I'm just going to say, on either end of the statistical index here, it was a little bit of a surprise to me because number one was not who you were necessarily expecting, although they are close, and number 30 is not who you were expecting, but they are at least relatively close. So the object of this is basically you want to have the lowest number possible total because we are adding up where you place in each of these categories here. So Oklahoma City placing number one because they had the least number of points from all the categories, 25. They placed sixth in defensive ranking, and they were in the top four or higher in every other category. A close number two with 30 points is Boston. And again, number 30, not necessarily who you'd expect because of the amount of pub they were getting for having a historically awful first half. Detroit is actually 28th with 236 points. Only one behind San Antonio with 235, and they are ahead of Charlotte at 237, so obviously those are very closely bunched up. Portland at 245, your hometown Blazers coming in 30th, Ben Chu. Now, I know you're not surprised that they're way down there, but you got to be at least somewhat surprised that they came out a little bit worse than Detroit.
Yeah, I think so too, but we also have discussed too that Detroit has had 2 to 4 games this season get away from them, and Portland has had stretches where they've been without Malcolm Brogdon, they've been without Shaedon Sharpe, so it's not surprising the way that the Portland Trailblazers have been playing as of late, that they aren't exactly, you know, I wasn't super surprised. I was actually a little bit more surprised that Oklahoma City is number one more than anything in that period.
Yeah.
But it's overall not surprising because they're a very balanced team right now. They play their own style of basketball. So it's not surprising they're very good defensively. They're also very good in, you know, in total net rating. I believe they're in the top 8 right now.
Yeah.
So it seems like, you know, again, I don't think anything is super shocking with either of those teams right there. But it's more just in terms of some of the teams that we're more focused on heavily, like Detroit, San Antonio, Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, obviously with Embiid dealing with his injury issues, probably fell off a little bit there too. But it you know, some surprising things, but also I feel like Oklahoma City and Portland being 1 and 30th is not as super shocking as people would think.
Exactly. And you look at this here, the second tier, the LA Clippers occupy that all on their own. They have 56 points. And then from there, the third tier starts with Minnesota, who has been the top dog in the West most of the way. They have 68 points, and then it kind of works its way down from there. Indiana, who has had a better-than-expected first half, the advanced statistics really love them. They're actually in fifth place. Milwaukee still sixth, although if you were just looking at the last 10 games, they'd be a lot worse. New Orleans 7, Cleveland 8. It's kind of the reverse of Milwaukee. If you were looking at just the last 15 games, Cleveland would probably be 1 or 2. Denver, a surprising 9. Phoenix, 10. And then you've got on the verge of that Philly at 11, and New York and Dallas tied at 12. Phoenix, 23rd in the assist-to-turnover ratio. That is the worst number that they have here, and one of the things putting them there. Gee, who would have thought coming into the season, Ben, that a team without a true point guard would be 23rd in that category, huh? Who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, it's not particularly surprising with Phoenix, but they've received, you know, they've improved guard play as of recently. Devin Booker's been pretty much shooting the lights out over the last 8 to 10 games. I think he's averaging almost 32 points a game at that clip, but again, they're still trying to figure out what they could be doing a little bit better. And then we saw also that they were huge buyout candidates and trade candidates during the NBA trade deadline. So it's going to be very interesting to see where they kind of end up. It's really weird, Rick. It's kind of, this sort of reminds me more of like Eastern Conference of a couple years back, where you had 5 or 6 really good teams that kind of shuffled in between each other for most of the season.
I agree with you, because I think, again, the West winner definitely comes out of, in order on our list, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Denver, Phoenix. I don't even know if I put New Orleans necessarily in there. I mean, I guess there's an argument to be made for them potentially. But, you know, in looking at this year, again, Denver, they are still, as you can see from the playoff predictions on the breakdown, in my estimation, the team to beat in the West. But a little bit surprising here in terms of some of the numbers for them. Double digits in a few places. 12th in offensive rating, 11th in defensive rating, 14th in EFG, 16th in the TS percentage, and 14th in three-point percentage, 11th in margin of victory. So this is one of these things where I think it would be way too harsh to say championship hangover, because it's not that. But by and large, you know, we've only really, I think, seen the Denver team we expected to see fleetingly thus far this season, which, again, may be bad news for the rest of the West, because maybe we're due to see it a little bit more.
Right, and I think we're also, it's just, and pretty much if you've just been staring at the West standings for the last 3 weeks, you've seen the cycle of either Denver going to 1 or Minnesota going to 1 or OKC going to 1. So it's very, we'll probably see a little bit of a shakeout post All-Star break, because usually what ends up happening is one of three teams usually pulls away, or two teams usually battle it out to the end. But it's going to be very interesting, because there's legitimate scenarios where you can have a team like your number one current listed OKC finish overall number one or finish in fourth. So yes, it's going to be very interesting to see how these final couple of weeks of the season play out.
It is going to be. And you've got Denver and Phoenix, who are the teams that I had expected to be in the conference finals coming into the season. But teams that are standing in their way, Oklahoma City and Minnesota, both of them very young teams, particularly OKC. I'll get to them in a second. But Minnesota, they are being led most of all by Anthony Edwards, just really leveling up yet again and taking it to yet another place here. Because the Timberwolves, I think most people thought of as coming into the season, at best, a borderline playoff team. But again, they have been number one in the West for much of the season. Do you expect the youth of this team in some of the key places to catch up to them in the end?
I think in the end, it's going to probably come down to who their matchup is in the first round. It's going to be pretty, I think, imperative for them to lock down the number one overall seed, because they'll probably then face either a Sacramento or a Dallas in the first round, which I think are very winnable games for them. But if they sort of slip down to that 3-4 spot, and they'll have to play tougher teams like New Orleans or the Phoenix Suns, or, you know, potentially they could be in a situation where they fall to where they lose home court advantage after leading the West for most of the regular season. So I think there's going to be some inexperience based on their youth, but it's a very veteran-laden team. If you look at it, they have Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Kyle Anderson. So I'm a little bit, because I know you're going to transition to OKC in a second, but I'm a little bit more concerned with OKC, even though they have better advanced metric stats, because they have a much younger roster than Minnesota has currently composed.
Oh, it is significantly so. And that's one of the things where I think the biggest leap of faith in terms of looking at them as far as a team that could make the finals would be that, and would be the very thin experience on this roster in that regard. And this is one of these things where, again, I'm going to put us over, you and I coming into the season here. Again, we had Oklahoma City, I think each of us, making at least the conference semifinals here, which is more than a lot of people did. There's not a lot of people out there that necessarily said they're going to take another step. And you and I would be right, except for the fact that they've taken another two or three thus far. And that's one of these things where, again, typically a team like this doesn't take as many steps up to make it there. I say this, again, the hard way as a Cavs fan back in the 2000s here, you know, being impatient for the Cavs to get to that point here. Normally, you don't level up that much in a year and take it all the way to the finals. And again, the West is going to have a lot of landmines in the way. So there are copious reasons not to believe that Oklahoma City is going to get it done. But on talent alone, and adding Chet Holmgren to this mix, on talent alone, they could be there right to the end. I've actually got the West Finals going seven games and them being in it.
Yeah, and I think with OKC, the biggest thing for them ultimately is going to be ultimately Shea's performance in the playoffs. Because we saw a little bit in the play-in tournament last year of his dominance when scoring, and he probably, in most scenarios, if there wasn't so many top-talented players, he probably would be the runaway MVP at this point.
Right.
But it feels like, to me, the balance that OKC has with guys like Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren, Cason Wallace coming off the bench has played very well. We've seen a little bit of Isaiah Joe as well, who's played pretty solid throughout the entirety of the season. But ultimately, I think it's going to then come down to coaching, and Mark Diagonal is probably very close to front runner for head coach of the year. If it's not him or Chris Finch, I'll be very surprised at this point. My concern of OKC is that there isn't, like, they did pick up Gordon Hayward in the buyout during the NBA trade deadline. But I always, we always discuss this, Rick, in prior podcasts, where it feels like for a team to get to the finals, you really need one or two guys with veteran experience. And really, at this point, if it's a past his prime, Gordon Hayward is your veteran experience. I don't know if they can get there, but I would not be surprised, because if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander can level up in the playoffs, which seems completely capable of what he did in the FIBA World Cup with Team Canada, I'm not surprised if OKC goes on a deep playoff run this time around.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, not to jinx him, but again, sometimes for big men, health issues can come up, you know, just the physicality of everything. And Chet Holmgren already missed what would have been his rookie season, now playing so well in what actually is his rookie season. But they got to hope that he can stay in the mix. If he can't stay in the mix, then I think it's a different story. I thought that, again, OKC was going to be a franchise that was going to see the Coach of the Year award come to them preseason. That was my pick, because I think just making it as far as I thought they were going to make it, that would have been something, because it's usually what you do to beat expectations, right? It's, you know, you can have a good team, but again, the coach of a great team is never going to make it. Mike Malone will never again win Coach of the Year. They can go 82-0 and that'll never happen. So it's always about beating the spread of expectations. And Oklahoma
right,
City.
And the big thing for Oklahoma City is just how they've built the organization since moving from Seattle. And you have to give some credit to, you know, to general manager Sam Presti for essentially blowing that middle round playoff team up and try and start anew. And so far they've done, I would say, a B-plus job of rebuilding on the fly and getting the talent that's there. And they still have a lot of draft picks in the queue and they have a lot of opportunity. The question is, and I think this is going to be one of the big stories, there was an article, I think, earlier this month in The Ringer talking about Sam Presti's lack of deadline deals and going after impact guys. So the question ultimately I'm going to have is, Sam Presti's a great guy who can build up a team, but is he good enough to get them over the line? Very similar to a David Griffin or a Jerry Krause. It's going to be something that we're going to have to monitor and see, because at current roster construction, it's a very young team. And I'm a little more surprised they didn't try and go all in on their potential moment, considering the odds that Shea and Chet are two guys who are very, I would say athletically are incredibly gifted, but they're also, in my mind, guys who are very injury prone.
They are, definitely. And yeah, there's a lot to keep an eye on there. That is one of the most intriguing situations out there. And I'm just going to say again, as pertains to Oklahoma City, that this is why people want to follow the course of our basketball discussions here on the show over the years, you and I, because we talked about it beforehand, we talked about it during, and now we can talk about it afterwards. And now that they're back to being a good to great team and say, we told you so. All this stuff that Presti did, and I'm not ripping on Presti for having gotten it, but as far as the way that the regular basketball media valued it, like, OMG, they have 737 draft picks through the rest of the decade. We said consistently they will make it back based on their own draft picks, based on the fact that they are going to suck for the short term. And basically, with almost no exceptions, that's what they've done. They have gotten back to this level by making their own draft picks, like Chet Holmgren and some of these other guys, and they're really just about everybody else. It's come off of their own
picks. The pretty much the forgotten player on that team is Jalen Williams.
Yes, him too.
We saw during the that we're recording this on a Saturday mid-morning, mid-afternoon, and we saw last night in the Rising Stars Challenge why he is probably the most underrated player in the NBA today, just for his ability to get to the basket, make big shots, be incredibly stout defensively. So,
yeah.
You know, again, not really surprised, because the rule is based off of the Sam Hinkie process rules. If you have enough draft picks, Rick, just by the law of averages, your favorite thing, you're going to make two or three good choices at least once.
Absolutely, yes. And again, some of it is the luck of the draw in terms of looking at it with the Sixers when they did the process. It was a thing where they had almost, I mean, everybody thought that the centerpiece was going to be Ben Simmons. He never learned to shoot the basketball. But year after year, they were in that position and really didn't have anybody that great to pick from. The next best great that there was to pick from was Joel Embiid, who for a couple of years there was like, oh, if only that guy could stay healthy. Well, now he's been able to stay healthy and he's become a megastar. But it's the luck of the draw, because there were some very bad drafts at the top in the 2000s. And Oklahoma City has been in the right place at the right time for being able to add pieces to the rotation here. Again, they're sitting in a very good spot. I will just say also, too, in my own typically smarky way, as far as all the good fortune they've had going their way, one of those things would be the burden of proof in the legal system, because that kept them from losing a piece that we thought they were going to lose back around, say, December or so, Ben Chu. So that whole thing there, they have been lucky in that way as well. So we'll see how far they can make it in the Western Conference. I got them going all the way to the finals of the conference against Denver. In the Eastern Conference, we all expected coming into the year Boston and Milwaukee to be the 1 and 2 seeds here in whatever order. Boston has held up their end of the bargain almost wire to wire going through this thing here. And again, looking at their advanced metrics, some of them, the lowest that they placed, TS percentage 6th, assist to turnover ratio 7th, 3-point percentage 6th. I say it again, these are the lowest that they rank on any of the index numbers here. That's why they placed 2nd in the index overall. Milwaukee, again, trying to rip a page out of the playbook of David Blatt and Ty Lue with the Cavs in 2016. Blow out the existing coach, even though they got a great record on paper. Try to do an upgrade. Thing is, the Cavs went from within. And the Cavs knew what they had in Ty Lue and knew that it was, if it could ever be a safe bet, elevating the number two guy in a winning situation, it would have been that. You go outside the organization, you get Doc Rivers, anything but a safe bet, and in the short term, it has not worked, and they've lost precious ground on Boston.
Right, and I think, to start with Boston first, I don't think anyone's really surprised with their acquisition of Porzingis and Jrue Holiday in the offseason that this team was going to be good, and it's been proven on point. The question I think we all have with Boston is ultimately is their surprising lack of depth past their starting five, is that going to come back to bite them in the playoffs? And I feel like almost it's the same story with Milwaukee. Like, we know Dame, we know Giannis has been playing well. Bobby Portis has had a pretty solid season too. Brook Lopez has been great for them. The question I wonder with both of these teams too, Rick, is the two teams that are hot on their heels, Cleveland, New York, and we can also add Miami to the mix as well, are much deeper squads than they are. And I start to wonder if we get to the playoffs, if both of those teams are just way too top heavy to make a deeper run, because we've seen in the playoffs, yes, rotation shoring, but it comes down to your 6, 7, and 8 guys. And if I'm being honest, I'm not 100% sure that either of those franchises has a clear-cut 6th, 7th, or 8th guy off the bench at this period of time.
Well, I tell you what, before we get to some of the other teams here, let me bring up one you didn't mention yet, because I want you to settle an argument between myself and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway. When I sent him the breakdown last night, and he was referencing specifically my playoff predictions, and that being the second round, the Cavs going over the Sixers, he disagreed with that because he thought that largely that Embiid was going to be too much to handle, and that, you know, with some of the other pieces in there, Maxey and Hield, that they would be able to hold up their end of the bargain as much. I said, here's my argument for it, is that the Cavs, thus far at least, now some of it is the minutes restriction with Mobley coming back from his injury. They've been doing the smart thing and keeping Allen and Mobley apart to a decent degree, which is what I said coming into this thing with Mobley's return that they should do. So if they do that, and you're looking at 48 minutes on the floor or close to it, it won't be 48 minutes, but it could be 44 somewhere in there where either Allen or Mobley is out there. You're forcing Embiid to go 40 minutes, and I think it takes a toll in that way. I think that's where the depth of the Cavs could grind down the Sixers. What say you?
I mean, I think the question ultimately, I don't think it even comes down to Cleveland. It comes down to the health of Joel Embiid, because it's been proven in recent games against Cleveland that Embiid has pretty much shredded them in most periods of those games, or most quarters of those games. So ultimately, I think the question becomes that if he's healthy enough, the Sixers have a very good chance to make a run, especially with Boston and Philly having their own minor issues.
Well, he should be back before the playoffs, so any of the Philly fans out there should have a chance to feel good about that. As relates to the Cavs, again, the team that I know the best in the NBA, my hometown team, a team that I love with all my heart, I have said recently, like, I mean, the 2016 team, that's on another level because they won the championship. But as far as, like, sentimentally, like, my favorite Cavs teams ever, this is potentially displacing any of the Price, Doherty, Nance, Hot Rod teams this year, seeing this team and what they're doing. And it's very interesting because they're challenging some of the perceptions that we have in this league about how you can win. Because it comes down to, you know, we always talk about, yes, depth is important, but the Cavs at this point can legitimately go 10 deep. That's something that a lot of teams don't necessarily want to do. J.B. Bickerstaff sometimes has to be dragged kicking and screaming into going, you know, 9 deep sometimes even. But with some of the guys that nobody outside of Cleveland had ever heard of before this season, Sam Merrill, Craig Porter Jr., emerging the way that they have, by the way, the heroes of the Summer League last year, if you were watching when the Cavs won the Summer League championship. But again, looking at what they've been able to bring, you have the one megastar in Donovan Mitchell. You have another guy in Darius Garland who's pretty close to that, at the very least a star. Evan Mobley, who's on his way to stardom. Jared Allen, who showed in the absence of Evan Mobley just how good he can be to all the doubters out there. And some of the other pieces on this team. And Merrill shooting at Steph Curry-esque percentages here. It's funny because the Cavs, looking at this index, 18th in three-point percentage, I'm looking at this like they must have been 28th back in December to only be 18th now. Like, they must be even worse than I thought they were before, and it's hard for them to be worse than I thought they were on threes before they had their turnaround, because this, the turnaround, they have been red hot on threes, but also much more willing to take threes and much more willing to play with some pace. The Cavs of last year and the year before didn't necessarily play at as fast of a pace as some other teams, which I thought was kind of dumb because they have the athleticism to be able to do it and now the depth to be able to do it. And you and I have kind of spitballed this a little bit on, you don't necessarily want to go first team, second team, but if you almost did like an internal draft kind of a thing, right? And you had, you know, Mitchell and Allen and maybe Strus on the one side, and you had Garland and LeVert and Mobley on the other side, and like spending a good part of those 48 minutes with different lineups. You maybe have a unified lineup at the start and end of the game, end of the half, but there's a chance to really get weird with it in a way where we could really see potentially a new paradigm coming about in the NBA if the Cavs could make it work, if they were willing to get weird with it.
Right, and I think the real question ultimately for Cleveland is very similar, I think, to Minnesota. It's like they have to achieve the highest seed possible or get the best possible matchup for themselves to move forward in the playoffs. And clearly the depth has been one of the stories of the season, because pretty much I think everyone, including me, were very skeptical how they would survive with no Garland and no Mobley for a huge portion of the season. And they pretty much, I think we all saw the pundits pretty left them for dead, and pretty much there was discussions that they should move Donovan Mitchell at the trade deadline. But now they're already now second in the Eastern Conference and in a very good position to solidify that. So I think this is the question, Rick, between depth and star power. Like, we all know Cleveland has Donovan Mitchell, and again, like we said, it's very similar to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. If this was another year, he'd be the clear-cut MVP favorite running away from it. But at this point, I think the question will be, at the end of the day, is will the Cavs others, like we talk about this with the whole LeBron era, it's like, will Garland, will Mobley, will, you know, guys like Craig Porter Jr., Sam Merrill, will Isaac Okoro, who's had a very solid season this year, will they show up in the playoffs? And will we see a Max Strus who had a great run for that last year in Miami? Or will we see the Max Strus in the NBA Finals who couldn't hit a three-pointer? So it's not one of the teams that I think is not really talked about as much as based on their seeding, because I feel like we talk about all these other teams. Cleveland seems to not be talked about enough in terms of what they were able to do in a scenario where most teams probably wouldn't have be in this position right now.
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing, too. And I'm sure you're not surprised to know, based on the years you spent in Cleveland, that a lot of people around here are butthurt about them getting overlooked. I don't have a problem with that. I only have a problem with the bad narratives when they come up, like, Donovan Mitchell is 1 foot out of Cleveland. Like, it's basically made up out of whole cloth. Nobody has any kind of evidence on this. And he said before the season, hey, guys, just because I didn't sign this past summer, I can still sign next summer. Well, he's a smart guy. You wouldn't be saying that if you didn't think there was a decent chance of it happening, because he will hear about that 24/7 if he doesn't sign in the next offseason, and then they'll be in a place where they got to make decisions. But it is kind of a fascinating...
And I mean, too, Rick, one point is that it's for people who, especially for Mitchell, because most of the thing seems to be, because we haven't really talked about the Knicks yet, I know they're going through their own sort of injury issues. Brunson's been a little banged up. Randall's out for a couple of weeks. They've lost Mitchell Robinson for most of the season. Hopefully he'll come back later on. It strikes me almost that we talk about some of these other teams too much, and then we also don't give enough credence to teams who have done well. And that seems to be, again, that's punditry. And I think also, too, with most of the talk was that Cleveland was going to fold up shop, and then pretty much Donovan Mitchell would be well on his way to New York. But it seems now more that if I'm Donovan Mitchell, I want to see how my team performs in the playoffs, because I would make the argument right now with the depth of roster that Cleveland has, they have a much brighter future than some of these other teams in the top of the Eastern Conference.
Well, and there's a guy that you mentioned sort of in passing that I think is potentially more key to the Cavs than anything else, because if we're contrasting last year to this year, and that's Max Strus, because it's a thing where, as I've said to you off air, that like getting to watch him night in and night out, like this, I knew he was a shooter. And by the way, what he did in the finals, I mean, even shooters are going to go through bad stretches. So it's a thing where if you look at the totality of the guy's record, He is a guy who's very dependable from out there. He's not a guy who's hit or miss. You know who was hit or miss? And as much as I loved him, and I always kept the faith that he would discover the kind of consistency he needed, Chetty Osmond. But it was down to Chetty Osmond and Isaac Okoro last year. And now Isaac Okoro, with less pressure on him to be a good three-point shooter, has improved decently. But in that series against the Knicks, that was the fatal flaw. They would sag off of these guys, and it was putting too much pressure on the rest of the Cavs' offense here. You got Max Strus out there. You got to be on him. That frees up. I mean, we talk about spacing so much, it's almost a cliche. But the Cavs went out and did that. And like I said to you previously, they got a guy back who is so much more than I ever thought he was. A guy who's a good defensive presence as well, who's kind of pesky in that way. And just really raises the game of the team all the way around. He's exactly what the team needed in the playoffs last year. And if you look at it this year, that the fundamentals of the playoffs don't change from year to year, that tells me he's exactly what they need to foist off a debacle like the Knicks series from last year.
Right, and to possibly change subjects at some point, because I feel like we must before this becomes a fear to sword.
No problem with that, but go ahead.
I do have to know that the one thing, last year's Cleveland team, and we saw this very blatantly in the playoffs, that they were just not a good three-point shooting team. And on top of that, there were periods of time that they would just be lulled to sleep by the New York defense and essentially just forcing Donovan Mitchell to take threes, Darius Garland to take threes. And now with a team that's a little bit more balanced, they're also a little bit, now that they're more, I feel like with this current roster, they're a little bit more capable of pulling out tougher games. I'll use their game just before the All-Star break against Chicago as a good example. They trailed for almost 42 minutes of that game and pulled it out at the end. So this is where it's going to probably come down to JV and Donovan Mitchell to see how far the Cavs will go. But again, I'll note this too. I'm not 100% sold that if Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs don't do well this season, that he doesn't try to stick it out just because they have a depth of roster much better than any other team in the Eastern Conference, maybe outside of, I would say you could squint a little bit and see Orlando at some point next season, possibly having a more composed roster as well. But if I'm Donovan Mitchell, I'm not really choosing to leave the situation unless I get sort of a guarantee that I'm going to become, you know, this is going to guarantee me a championship.
Well, and that's the whole thing. Like, in my life, I get frustrated in any areas, whether it be this, whether it be HOA stuff, whatever. When people get distracted by the shiny object and stop talking about the fundamentals of the situation, the fundamentals of the team here going forward, that's going to matter to Donovan Mitchell maybe more than anything else, because he wants to be in a situation where he can win. And we have a small sample size here, but Evan Mobley, since coming back, is giving some signs of being leveled up Evan Mobley, and that's the biggest X factor here. And I'll make this my last point on the Cavs, but it's one of these things where if Evan Mobley starts to get to where we've all been waiting for him to get to, then the Cavs are a legitimate NBA Finals candidate. Absolutely legitimate, because that the level of weapon that guy would be fully realized just changes the entire equation.
And we've discussed it too, and it's going to be sort of an argument. And just to put, I'll do the flip side of the coin to go back to the Knicks. It's like, we've seen Jalen Brunson do that this season. He's leveled up to a completely different level to where he was in Dallas. So it feels like to me that moving forward in the Eastern Conference, because I'm going to roughly assume, Rick, that Boston, Milwaukee, and Philly are all on a timeline of about 2 to 3 more years where their peak is going to be.
Yes.
And a lot of these other teams like Cleveland, Orlando, you know, that we'll keep talking about Miami because Miami will always find a way to stay competitive. So it's going to be very interesting to see where the Eastern Conference sort of lies, especially since, you know, we exist in a world where there's no Wemby and there doesn't seem to be a gangbuster team in the Eastern Conference at the moment. So it's very possible we could see either Cleveland or New York or Miami go on a long string of finals runs based on just the totality of talent in the Eastern Conference.
Very much so. And again, Boston, while not stylistically, is a lot like Phoenix as far as being a little bit top-heavy in terms of their top three, four, five guys, however you want to draw that off, versus the rest of their roster.
And again, Rick, and I'll know about them too, it's not that I don't believe they can get to the NBA Finals. I believe wholeheartedly they can. It's just more along the lines of, do they have enough off the bench to do it? Because essentially, if you're using a combo of Luke Kornet, Peyton Pritchard, and company, I don't know how good that is.
Right.
In the playoffs.
One of the things with the Knicks that is surprising, because they have had a very strong year, notwithstanding Randall being down for a period of time, but as much as I said, Phoenix 23rd in assist-to-turnover ratio, no surprise. Turns out they're actually tied for 23rd with the Knicks, and that is a surprise to me.
Yeah, it is a little surprising to me, too, but I also know that there were times when Jalen Brunson had to take over games, so it's not surprising they're not getting as many assists as they could. And again, remember, Rick, this is a Tom Thibodeau-led offense, so Tom Thibodeau offenses don't usually tend to have a lot of assists.
True.
It's a lot of isolation basketball and movement around from isolation. But it's going to, I mean, I feel the Knicks are a team we have to talk about because this is arguably, this is not shocking to say, the best Knicks team they've had in a while. And they definitely made some moves around the edges to make that team, the team a little bit better. But again, the question is ultimately going to come down to, in the playoffs, is Julius Randle and Jalen Brunson going to be healthy enough to win playoff series. And then I know they won one last year against Cleveland too, but I'm also saying it's a question to ask at this point.
It is.
It's the same thing with Cleveland too at the end of the day.
Right.
Both of these teams have enough talent and depth to get over the finish line, but will they have enough, I would say, chutzpah, and to make it to a conference finals or an NBA finals?
Well, and your point about Tibbs is well taken. The flip side of my argument on them being tied for 23rd, and assist to turnover ratio is that his offenses are generally at least efficient. So for there to be enough turnovers on the other side of the ledger to make it that, you know what I mean? I can see where there wouldn't be a ton of assists, but there's enough turnovers to make that ratio kind of hinky there, which I wouldn't necessarily expect, which I'm not even saying that's a danger sign necessarily, but 18th in EFG, 19th in TS percentage. There's definitely a lot that they got to get right before the playoffs. And I think they're going to, but I think the flip side is it's always difficult for teams to reintegrate parts in right before the playoffs. God knows my 2009-2010 Cleveland Cavaliers will be the all-time example of that one.
Yeah, and I think the question, too, ultimately is, it's the NBA season is a grind, and we see this almost every year in this last, you know, 5 or 6 years. Someone is going to get injured who's going to be a notable superstar for one of these teams in the playoffs. So
yeah,
it's going to come down to, can you stay healthy? And it's also going to be, will Julius Randle be able to come back from sort of a shoulder issue that, you know, again, shoulder, you know, it was mainly more of a partial dislocation more than anything else. But again, as a player dealing with a separated shoulder, dealing with any sort of like hand or shoulder injury, working back into getting your shots up and getting that conditioning is definitely a lot more of a thing than, let's say, like Darius Garland getting a broken jaw or something like that.
Well, that's true. That definitely is. The other team that I'm going to bring up in the East as far as being, and I'm going to use like half-hearted air quotes when I say contender, because they are a strong team, Indiana. And they made the finals of the in-season tournament. I don't know if they raise a banner for that the way that the Lakers did for actually winning the in-season tournament. But yeah, as far as it goes, they're a team. It's kind of one of the things that makes me giggle a little bit. For a team that comes from the same state as the movie Hoosiers, to be running the offense that they are and be 25th in defensive rating, I mean, this is the most un-Hoosiers-like Pacers team we've ever seen, probably. And again, they get Pascal Siakam. It's the reinforcement they needed in the front court, and a heck of a twin towers with him and Turner. That being said, if you want to look at, you know, going down the road a bit, and this is not an original observation, but he's not exactly on the same timeline as Halliburton, the big star. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But it's a team where, again, that 25 is really the skid mark on their record, if you're looking at this year. But again, you know, defense is half of the game here. So that's where they really sort of pay a price. But the efficiency offensively, is just otherworldly. So this is a team where, again, they outside of Siakam, they had a lot of the same key parts coming into the season here, but they're also looking to level up in a way similar to Minnesota and Oklahoma City, the likes of which you don't generally see in the course of just 1 year.
Right, and it's looking like the Tyrese Haliburton, DeMontis Sabonis trade has been pretty much a push, which is really shocking, because you would think when two all-star caliber guys get traded for each other, it's going to implode both teams, but they actually have both made each team better.
Yeah.
And it's Indiana is an interesting thing, because we all know Haliburton has made himself into a top 25 NBA player. I don't think this is a question anymore. He's a top 25 NBA player now.
15, I'd say.
The success in the in-season tournament that they've had and getting Siakam at the deadline, they are, I wouldn't say a contender, but they are definitely a dark horse in the Eastern Conference if they can put a string of games together to win some series. Because essentially, Rick, I like to say is defense and net rating and all these things are great regular season stats, but once you get to the playoffs, as long as you're capable of stopping teams and getting stops at the end of the game, you have a high percentage of chance. Like, we've seen it, I believe, was the best example of this would be the 2000 Lakers, who won a title with the regular season being the 15th, having a defensive rating of 15th overall.
Yeah.
So you can, if your offense is good enough, you can beat and win playoff series. The question ultimately is going to be coming later on in the playoffs, in the semifinals and the conference finals, is if you can't consistently get stops against good teams, you're not going to go far in the playoffs.
Right. And it's basically, they're kind of like the Sean Payton Saints, aren't they? Those Saints needed the defense to just be middle of the pack in order for them to win and be a strong contender for a championship. And it's the same thing here with Indiana. They're not winning crap when they're 25th in defensive rating. You nudge that number up from there, and they could somewhat get into the acceptable zone on that. And again,
I also feel like very similar, Rick, to I would say another team that we didn't really talk about in the Western Conference, Sacramento. Based on who they get in the first round will ultimately, I think, determine their destiny in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you mentioned them, because when you mentioned Sabonis a little bit ago, I am quick to put myself over on things where I'm right, but that was one where I thought they really got ripped off on the Haliburton thing, just because, and again, Haliburton, much like James Harden, did I know he was going to be that good when he got traded? No, but I knew he was going to be better than what he was in the previous situation. How could he not? He didn't really have a fair chance in Sacramento. Sabonis, let me tell you something, man. This is one of these things, and again, you are a historian and an old soul, so even though you're not an old head like me and you didn't necessarily live through it as much, you're going to know what I'm talking about. But, like, the legend of his old man, it was like, oh, man, if he could have been in the NBA in his prime. Like, stylistically, it's not the same, because Sabonis is this postmodern big man, a lot like Jokic as far as, you know, being able to be a good playmaker and everything else. So it's not necessarily the same as his dad stylistically. Some things yes, some things no, but we're seeing a version of him somewhat like if we would have seen Sabonis in the NBA in the 80s instead of the 90s.
Right, and I think it's just one of those teams that ends up, Sacramento has had their weird periods of time during the season where they've looked like themselves and then had some games where they just have not played well at all.
Yeah. You're going to have that.
Very apparent to me that they're a very good team, but I also run into issues where if we're looking at the, I'm just trying to think overall in terms of what, especially in terms of the up-tempo offense and what they can do in terms of stopping guys. And it feels like a lot of the other teams, like the OKCs and the Minnesota Timberwolves of the world, have leveled up to the point and Sacramento has kind of just been stable.
I think so, yeah. I think that's a very good way of putting it, that it's not so much that they've regressed through the course of the year, but other teams have stepped up. And, again, two legacy teams, if we're going to be talking about, well, one is a legacy team for all time in the L.A. Lakers. The other is a legacy team of the last decade, Golden State. We haven't talked about either of these teams yet, and that's for a reason, because they both look like play-in teams at this point, and probably one and done for whichever of them might make it to the playoffs.
Right. And I feel like it's one of those situations that we have to determine again. It's a matchup thing.
Yeah.
For Florence. It's a matchup. We talk all about seedings, and we talk about where the team wants to be, but I've always used this rule. It's like your pathway to the playoffs is determined on how you play, not where you're seated.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And what kind of breaks you draw or don't draw. And each of those teams would need to draw to not one inside straight, but probably at least two or three through the course of the playoffs just to be able to decently advance, much less get to the championship round, which they are counting on doing. In the East, I do see it coming down to the 1 and 2 seeds. I've got number 1 Boston over number 2 Cleveland in 6. These are my projected seedings, of course. In the West, I see Denver, now that they are relatively close, I see them taking the number 1 seed. And again, we always talk about altitude, among other factors. One more reason it makes it tough. I think OKC can push them to 7 in a classic, but I've got Denver getting by. And in the finals, again, this would have been my pick last year had these two teams met. They almost did because they were both in the conference finals, Denver over Boston. I think all the more so because Boston, again, more as we keep saying, more dangerous to play than they were a year ago with Porzingis with the starting lineup. But with the bench, not so much. And Denver, they got a bench, buddy. So that's, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the difference. I think Jokic being the best player in the world when push comes to shove is the difference. But Jokic plus Murray plus bench, Denver over Boston would be my pick.
Yeah, and I think it's going to come down to it's just such a hodgepodge at this time. So I think it's very hard to pick the final two on both sides. But I'm going to lean towards your Boston favorite. I just think they are in terms of roster construction the best starting lineup currently in the NBA. So I have them going to the Eastern Conference, winning the Eastern Conference Finals, and I'm going to go out on a limb because I feel like this is the right thing. I have a feeling Minnesota is going to retain that overall number one seed, and they're going to pull out a kind of shocking win over the Oklahoma City Thunder, who I feel are also going to get there, but I feel like it's either going to be OKC over Denver or Minnesota beating Denver. So I think, and I hate to say it, Rick, I know you don't like the chouds, but I think this is the year that the Celtics fans finally break that mini-title drought.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Something that only they could whine about, given that it's been, 2008 or so. But, yeah, that is that could happen. That would very much happen. The Kevin Garnett Finals, if it comes down to it. And that would be one where I think, yeah, I mean, Boston would definitely be the favorite in my book. Because the funny thing is I presently, and this shows you how thin of a margin it all is and how it's based on matchups. I have Minnesota being the 4 seed and thus going down to number 5 Phoenix in 7 games in the conference quarters. So the seedings are so important that I, with Minnesota at 4, have them going out in the first round. You, with Minnesota at 1, have them going to the NBA Finals.
All right, and we saw this in the West, the top 3 teams are essentially within a game and a half of each other, and I feel like it's going to be like that for most of the end of the year, so.
Yeah, I think
so. Ultimately, it's going to come down to, and we say this, is depth and experience. I think Denver has a more likelihood of getting the overall number one seed, but I also kind of feel like that sort of post-championship hangover is going to probably prevent them from getting the overall number one.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and I'm sure they have the level of confidence internally, especially looking at the way they carved through the playoffs last year, that they may not need the one seed to get there. That being said, if I was them and it was this close, I'd still put my foot on the pedal just to try and get there, because I'm not going to say it's a guarantee of getting to the finals if you're one, but the deck is really stacked in their favor. Versus, I still think they're the best team regardless, but if they're the 3 seed and they're looking at potentially playing 2 series on the road, and then potentially the NBA Finals, that's where it could get a little bit more interesting. So,
right, and in this case, and I'll note this too, especially in the Western Conference, the overall number one seed will probably have the easiest playoff matchup this year.
Well, I would agree.
I know it is in many other years too, but what I'm essentially saying is that 1-7 is just so deep right now that you have an opportunity to get a much better team.
Oh, I totally agree, because in the East, my first round series is I have number 1 Boston over number 8 Orlando and 5. Orlando is basically at this point a poor man's Oklahoma City as far as a very talented team but very young. And then in the West, I have number 1 Denver over number 8 Dallas and 6. Dallas, the epitome of a team that is top heavy right now, doesn't have enough depth. So yeah, I mean, if you're the 1 seed in both conferences, and again, if not for the fact that I think Luka can take over maybe a game or two, I don't even know if I'd have it going to 6. I don't know if you would call 6 quite a gentleman's sweep, but I think Denver would beat Dallas without having to break that much of a sweat in 6 games, if that makes any sense.
Right, and I think there'll be some definitely good games, but I don't think Dallas would be favored in that
series. No, not at all, not as things stand presently. So we'll have to see where things go through the second half, but it is always the best analysis and best breakdown you are going to get anywhere with FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu, my great friend. Thank you, Ben, so much for being here today, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate it as always, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, bud. Take care, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1712.